You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
We do have a major problem because these people are doing this under the cover of darkness. And they're also doing it knowing that even if you find out what's going on, and even if you complain, that chances are you're not going to do anything about it because you're afraid. Well, you need to stop being afraid. There are parents out there who have these kinds of things going on, and you need to fight for your children. You need to get in there and make sure that those schools understand you. And understand that this is not acceptable and that you will push on them.
We will push back. The woman speaking, Gabrielle Clark, she's with No Left Turn in Education. A quick history on Gabrielle in just a moment. Welcome to the program. This is August 3rd, 2022. We are live streaming at rumble.com. You can go to rumble.com. And I've heard from several of you, you're really enjoying it. They say you look a little animated sometimes, Larry. I said, yes, I do. Get pretty excited sometimes. It might make good TV or maybe not, but I can't control my emotions, and I'm not going to. I don't have to be the news anchor. I'm here to deliver a message, and I'm going to pound it repeatedly. And part of it has to do with protecting our children from indoctrination, as opposed to education in our schools. Gabrielle Clark is a woman who has biracial children. And her boy was told that he had to basically renounce his whiteness, had to renounce his whiteness. And also that they were going to be taught additional critical race theory teaching. And she has a daughter that she describes as someone, obviously, that has her own mind. Gabrielle identifies herself as an atheist, bisexual, biracial, homeless person. But she said, I don't want my child to be taught just because she is black and a woman, she ain't going to make it. She said, I want my daughter to be taught she needs to express herself in her classroom as needed. And she said in a speech to some of the Texas legislators, the House of Representatives education meeting, I swear to you, I promise, I will turn this into a class action lawsuit ambulance chasing business if you guys continue to insist on CR teaching and things of that nature for my children. They were in Nevada. They left Nevada, went to Texas, thought it'd be better, and encountering some of the same thing. We're going to be joined by John Schweppe. He's the American Principal Project Policies Manager. That's basically the NRA for families when it comes to lobbying efforts in Congress, battling in schools for parents. And there was also the majority of voters in Kansas yesterday voted to keep that state from banning abortions. Well, that was the intent of the U.S. Supreme Court and the ruling that basically overturned Roe v. Wade as law of the land. Let the states decide with their voters. The voters in Kansas said, we do not want to ban abortions in this state. Is that going to open the floodgate for additional challenges in other states? Most likely. But it is also an indicator of what's going to happen come November. Is abortion going to be that big? Because apparently, Republicans outnumbered Democrats in that vote yesterday in Kansas. We'll take a closer look at that. The drone strike, of course, that killed the top Al-Qaeda leader over the weekend, significant. But former CIA Director General Petraeus says it is great, but it might be more symbolic. And what does he mean by that? Because this guy was a most wanted terrorist going back to 9/11. He was with Osama bin Laden plotting it. He was Osama bin Laden's physician. We're going to be joined by Dustin Kamak, a previous chief of staff for the director of the National Intel Agency and get his take on what it means. And then the fact that terrorist operations are obviously open in Taliban country, Afghanistan, when they said they weren't going to allow it. Pelosi, back from her trip from Taiwan, or got out of Taiwan, I should say, safely. That's good. And then Governor DeSantis of Florida is asked to appear on the ABC The View, that liberal women talk program. The answer his office sent to The View, it's a laugh. It's a hoot. You want to hear it? Lock and load. Ready. On the right.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
Your eyes are burning. You're sneezing. It's allergy season. Pollen readings are sky high. Heck, you can even see that yellow powder on everything. So that's also inside your air conditioning ducts. I suggest you call Wellington Environmental. Now, other companies will be glad to do the job, but they're going to come to your home or business, count the air ducts, and begin increasing the cost. In fact, the quoted price might even double. Wellington offers one price, no extras. You'll be charged exactly what Wellington quotes. So this is easy for you. Call 314-644-4930, 644-4930. You will breathe easier. Wellington has a AAA rating with the Better Business Bureau. 314-644-4930, 644-4930. Wellington Environmental, your world cleaner, better, safer. Be well with Wellington. I want you to know something special. John Beal Roofing constantly gives back to the community in so many ways, supporting more charities and good causes than any other local roofing company. Why? It's the right thing to do. Keep that in mind when you need a new roof, plus quality work at the lowest price, guaranteed. John Beal, 1-800-NEW-ROOF, 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
Got me waking, bone man. Waking around the fire. I want a little rain of water. That you won't let Jimmy start. Big boy. Can't you hear me when I call?
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Well, you ain't.
On Saturday, at my direction, the United States successfully concluded an airstrike in Kabul, Afghanistan, that killed the emir of al-Qaeda, Ayman al-Zawahiri. You know, Zawahiri was bin Laden's leader. He was with him all the whole time. He was his number two man, his deputy, at the time the terrorists attacked 9/11. He was deeply involved in the planning of 9/11. Now, justice has been delivered, and this terrorist leader is no more.
I wanted you to hear that again. That's President Biden the other day announcing that over the weekend, we carried out this drone strike deep into Afghanistan at Kabul and killing the second in command, who had been under Osama bin Laden, of al-Qaeda. They'd apparently been watching him for some time. They knew he was living openly in Kabul. The Taliban had to know he was there because the house belonged to a Taliban chief of some type. And they began to watch and witness his patterns. Most of these terrorists have gotten used to that. Do not get on a cell phone. Don't have one near you. It can be easily tracked, and they can zero in and wipe you out, vaporize you. But he's in Taliban country, Afghanistan. We have no boots on the ground. That's what we're told. But we were getting source information, apparently, from some Afghans still in Taliban country that could not get out and at the risk of their lives, possibly. Or possibly some of this information came from overhead spy satellites. The bottom line is they recognize that he had a daily pattern, that he would go out, on the balcony of his safe house is in an upscale Kabul neighborhood inhabited by top Taliban officials, so they certainly knew he was there. His wife and children were inside the house, but he was the only one on the balcony. Every morning at a certain time to go out and just enjoy the view, maybe meditate, maybe be plotting in his mind a future terrorist attack against Americans or other targets. Well, last Sunday morning, as he's out there, maybe enjoying a cup of coffee, tea, whatever, two Hellfire drone missiles hit with precision. Destruction to the house, pretty minimal, considering when they hit the balcony, but wiped him out, vaporized him instantly. Now, General Petraeus, former CIA director, was on CNN, and he's talking about, you know, this strike, you cannot discount what it meant to get this target. But he adds a cautionary note.
It is a triumph for our intelligence community. It is significant that one of the original leaders of Al-Qaeda, a longtime international extremist and terrorist, has been brought to justice. It is perhaps, though, more symbolic, if you will, than it is of operational significance, noting that, of course, the real threat in Afghanistan, if there is one, of international extremism, is really the Islamic State affiliate there, the Khorasan Group. That is the organization that is fighting the Taliban as well, that is causing the instability in Afghanistan. And that's the one that we really have to keep an eye on, even as, again, this is a very significant takedown of a very, very long time and very significant extremist leader.
Now, again, the information that he was living there, as I said, it may have come from members of Afghanistan who still live there that are not members of Taliban, or maybe somebody in the Taliban. It was in an area, again, that was notorious, Serpur, I believe is the way it might be pronounced, as being a suburb of Kabul, swimming pools, private gardens. Many, even the Taliban, regarded that area and other Kabul residents, regarded that area as decadent spoils of corrupt government officials and warlords of the Taliban. But they don't say it out loud. The name of the neighborhood is often deliberately mispronounced, apparently, as Shupur, which means town of thieves. So those around there, looking at all this palatial estate area inside leafy gardens with pools, while they're living in hovels and trying to scrap out food, they were not happy the fact that this life was being led by Taliban warlords, and possibly that the Al-Qaeda leader was in their midst. The BBC insisted they, you know, went in with reporters and found that the house was empty, possibly on orders from the Taliban after the strike. And then Taliban guards swiftly started threatening to shoot reporters. You asked too many questions. Let me tell you something. You may think you're a great, big, strong journalist, but when you're facing a dozen rifles, I suggest you take the wise way out. Maybe don't ask those questions, not at that point. But a local journalist did talk to the BBC and said, we've seen non-Afghan residents in this neighborhood in the past couple of months. They don't speak the local language. We don't know who they are. So somewhere, someone began to leak information that we believe Al-Zawahiri is living in this mansion. Now, we don't have boots on the ground ever since we withdrew from Afghanistan, and that was a debacle by any definition of a debacle. And we abandoned Bagram Air Force Base with billions of dollars worth of military equipment now in the hands of the Taliban and any terrorist groups that form inside Afghanistan. Yesterday, the National Security Advisor for the Biden administration, Admiral Kirby, spoke about, even though we didn't have troops there, we were going to rely on what we call over-the-horizon ways to view potential targets in that area.
After the withdrawal from Afghanistan, we're talking about over-the-horizon counterterrorism capability and the degree to which we could do it. Well, this proves the case that it can be done. We didn't have any boots on the ground, but over a constant series of meticulous gathering of intelligence and information over the course of many months, we were able to execute this strike with great efficiency. And from the time the president decided to move forward on the 25th of July till the strike itself this Saturday night, really the only things that were kind of holding us up was weather, making sure that we exactly had eyes on the target. And of course, really importantly, because the president made this very strongly, is that there was not going to be any civilian casualties. So there was the timing was critical, but it really proves the case that over the horizon counterterrorism capability of a significant effect can be done.
Even former CIA Director General Petraeus agrees that over the horizon as an operational tool should have been considered effective all along. No one should have questioned it.
I don't think anyone ever questioned, though, the ability to conduct over-the-horizon operations. It's more the ability to really have a dense capability to do this, to really get sources that would be on the ground and could actually develop the kind of partners and so forth that are needed and are still needed at this point in time, of course, to root out the extremists in the Islamic State Khorasan group, which, as I mentioned, are the ones that really pose the international threat. Again, noting that this is a very big operation.
It was a very big operation. And again, he's living in the midst of these Taliban warlords. Many of the Taliban leaders and their families live in that kind of resort area compared to the rest of Afghanistan. And it has caused dissension and slanderous remarks from those, not publicly, when they see these people living in such luxury while they're trying to simply survive. They are enjoying the riches that they've been able to accumulate while the rest of the Afghans are living basically in the Stone Age. The other key is the fact that he was in that area. General Petraeus points out, obviously, it was with their permission.
The leader of al-Qaeda was located in Kabul, indicating clearly that in a way Taliban didn't learn the lesson from allowing, again, bin Laden to have a sanctuary on their soil when the 9/11 attacks were planned in Afghanistan, after which, of course, they refused to expel him from their territory. And, that, of course, that's why we had to go in. So it does reflect the continuing close relationship that clearly still exists between al-Qaeda's senior leadership, that small group of Zawahiri and the others that is still left, and obviously the Taliban senior leadership. The fact that he was in Kabul, I don't think, is something that could have been possible without the Taliban knowing that he was there.
I remind you that President Trump wanted to pull our troops out of Afghanistan. He didn't want boots on the ground. And he made what they call the Doha Agreement with the Taliban, that if we leave Afghanistan, you'll make sure it does not become a hotbed for terrorist activity, where they can thrive in Afghanistan as they were doing before. And if you promise and you follow certain conditions, we will remove our troops. And he set a timetable, I don't recall now what it was, but we got to that timetable date and he was no longer in office. Biden was. And Biden didn't get anything in trade with the Taliban. He just suddenly, in the middle of the night, decided to yank our forces out of there. So the Taliban felt that that broke the agreement to begin with. And the strike yesterday, or I should say over the weekend, they definitely say that broke our agreement. They said the nature, according to some of the senior Taliban figures, they say that's a clear violation of our agreement. It was carried out on a residential area. It was coming a year after Biden had ordered troops withdrawn from Afghanistan, prompting Taliban to rapidly seize control of the nation. Biden supposedly was going to make sure nothing like that happened, and yet we did take out that drone strike, and I'm glad we did, because they were violating the agreement on their side. But will one strike like this have an effect? To that extent, National Security Council White House advisor Admiral Kirby again.
Well, we certainly hope so. I mean, we certainly hope that the message has been sent, that we meant it when we said it, that we were going to make sure that we would not let Afghanistan become a safe haven for terrorist threats again to the homeland. So we hope it does. We hope it does have an effect on them and their behavior. But if it doesn't, Willie, we are still going to stay vigilant. We're still going to stay capable. And as we proved just over the last couple of days, we have the capability to conduct over-the-horizon counterterrorism strikes from far, far away with great effect. So I think the message has been very, very clearly sent, not just to al-Qaeda, but to anybody that might harbor them there.
Which would be the Taliban, because they control Afghanistan now. Their reaction, their chief spokesman said, and I'm quoting, "We strongly condemn an American drone strike in Kabul, killing the leader of al-Qaeda while he's in our midst." And again, they point out, "We had an agreement, the Doha agreement brokered with Trump in Doha, Qatar, that this would not be happening." But again, I remind you, Trump said, if you violate the agreement, you will pay for it. We know where you live. Trump used those words. We know where you live. We just proved we know where some of these guys are living. So the Taliban leader is still there. They have to realize, maybe we should get these terrorists out. Or did we end up stirring a hornet's nest? They were going to bite us and sting us at some point anyway, but did we disturb it in a way that now they're going to retaliate quickly and in various ways? General Petraeus on that issue when we continue. Please stand by.
Essentially, they have been operating autonomously, independently. They may be part of the brand of al-Qaeda, but they certainly weren't under any kind of operational control. Again, noting that this is a very, very symbolic success to bring one of the last of the original al-Qaeda leaders who did so much damage around the world. Again, the East Africa bombings, a number of the other bombings in North Africa, other exhortations of bombings elsewhere. Not to mention, of course, being a core part of al-Qaeda when the 9/11 attacks were planned.
Again, that's General Petraeus, retired. I'm glad he's trying to make sure we keep things in perspective, that it was obviously a significant action to take out the man who is now number one in al-Qaeda, who had been under Osama bin Laden. In fact, had been his physician because he was a doctor. But he's also pointing out that a lot of al-Qaeda cells are operating without any official leadership. They don't have any central command anymore. Maybe because they made that decision not to, because it will make them easier targets. Or maybe because they're having internal disagreements. Now, that's been cited several times before. I want to share something with you from Barron's regarding this strike the other day. By the way, in the beginning, according to Barron's, the original story that the Taliban ministry was telling everyone, there was no drone strike. A rocket struck an empty house in Kabul, causing no casualties. And by the time reporters could get to the area, as I said earlier, the house had been vacated. Normally, you're going to want to have DNA samples to prove that you got the guy you got. They did that with Osama bin Laden. I don't know if they were able to achieve or grab any of that. We don't have any, quote, boots on the ground of American forces. I don't know if anyone on our behalf operating inside Taliban country, Afghanistan, did it. or if they simply went by the fact that they had him visually identified and he's standing there and that's when they made the strike. Which brings me to another point. When we hear the White House and our security intel tell us we have no boots on the ground, I'm not going to contradict them, but we do have specialized forces, obviously the SEALs, more talk of the Marines, Army Rangers, that we could well have some forces on the ground in limited numbers that they're just there for observation and reporting back. I don't know if we do. I'm just pointing that out. If we do, we're not going to hear anything about it, thank God, for their safety. We shouldn't. But again, the Taliban, with Trump at Qatar, had agreed if he would pull U.S. troops out of Afghanistan under the Doha deal, the Taliban promised not to allow Afghanistan to be used again as a launch pad for international jihadism. But experts are pretty sure the Taliban never broke ties with Al-Qaeda. This show finding other wars inside Afghanistan against other groups that may or may not be, quote, terrorist, looking to go international and attack American targets, but maybe the Taliban or Al-Qaeda. But there's clear, Behrens points out, it's very clear in the Behrens as fact as well that they were hosting and sheltering the Islamic leader, grossly violating the Doha Agreement. This story is going to play out and have ripple effects for some time to come. And one of the ripple effects might well be increased escalation of terrorist acts against American targets or American allies. And in what form would it be coming? Is it a signal for those who've gotten inside our country? Now's the time to strike. My next guest coming up, Dustin Kamak, served as the chief of staff for the director of National Intelligence Agency, focusing on targeting terrorists. I want to get some of his views as to the effects of this drone strike and what comes next.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
Ackerman Toyota believes when you need service, you want genuine parts, certified mechanics, no hidden cost. You get all of that with Ackerman Toyota. Plus, if you're ready for a new car or pre-owned, see what Ackerman has on the lot or what's coming. Ackerman Toyota, Hampton and Interstate 44. Ackerman Toyota for life.
Come on, it'll be close, save a life, kind of life, so big and so strong. Come on, it'll be closer, I'm all alone, and the night is so long.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Welcome back again. Reminding you, we are live streaming at rumble.com. Simply go to rumble.com, search engine, one word, Larry Connors USA. It'll take you to our Rumble page, see previous postings, and you can push live and join us in studio. My next guest is with the Heritage Foundation, but before that, he served as chief of staff for the director of National Intel, Dustin Kamak. Dustin, glad to have you on board again, sir.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So, first of all, your reaction the other day when word came out about the drone strike killing Zawahiri.
Yeah, you know, it's something to be celebrated to see this individual removed from the globe, in my humble opinion. And it's been a lot of work by multiple administrations to hunt this guy down. And so it's, on net, it's great to see it, but then, immediately what I've told a lot of folks is, you can't rest on your laurels here. And there's a lot of interesting questions that come about of what this means. And the fact that, he was sitting right in the middle of a nice suburb of, Kabul, and essentially, under the Taliban's nose and under, essentially
where major, where major Taliban warlords also reside. They knew he was there.
Exactly, yeah. And so, you know, that's going to be, you know, not only am I not surprised by that, and there have been reports, you know, that senior al-Qaeda officials have kind of moved back into not only Afghanistan, but even the capital as recently as just a few months ago. But, you know, it's more telling of, you know, this is, you know, what are the consequences, and what is it that we don't know? You know, I think the attention on Zawahiri and the hunt for him is well known and been good, and we've lost, you know, CIA agents in the past in Afghanistan that were looking for him. But what is it that they are planning? And the understanding was that he was actively, you know, making, you know, videos and transmitting communications to the, you know, establishments of al-Qaeda that have kind of become a global network. And so it begs questions of what they are up to.
All right, that brings me to something, General Petraeus. We had him on before you joined us, and part of an interview where he said that this is certainly important, but it is more symbolic, similar to what you just said. And then it raises the question, as I phrase it, did we stir the hornet's nest? I mean, they're going to come sting you if they get a chance anyway, but are you going to knock it down and cause even more troubles immediately? And he pointed out that the al-Qaeda network is maybe, I would say, leaderless even before this strike, that they have broken into so many sects, maybe to provide protection, but there seems to be no central command. Is that your take?
Absolutely. And, you know, where it's been kind of a more centralized hub, you know, think of back in 1996, you know, and the establishment of, you know, bin Laden and al-Qaeda and the Taliban and they're in Afghanistan and the safe harbor. Now they're, you know, a disparate element that, you know, reaches all across the globe, everywhere from Yemen to especially, you know, in a lot of places in Africa are of deep concern, and then throughout the Middle East and Syria and, of course, you know, areas of Iraq. And so it has become a more mobilized, self-operating apparatus that, you know, still seeks leadership. They still have their emir. And this will be interesting to see what the food fight looks like in terms of who will try to stake claim of being the next leader of al-Qaeda. But it also shows you, though, too, the, you know, those broader questions of, regardless of those other places where they've well established themselves and we're consistently, you know, looking out after them, what is it that we're not seeing in Afghanistan now that we have a lot less capabilities to keep an eye on what they are up to there?
Yeah, I want to come back to that because that's part of the Over the Horizon project, obviously, that supposedly allowed this to happen. I want more details that you can share in a moment. But the leadership, obviously, someone will try to surface. Some reports are saying it's going to be someone out of Iran.
There is a, you know, the general view is there's a gentleman, not a gentleman, a terrorist, you know, living in Iran, and there's been, you know, well-established, you know, several al-Qaeda members and leadership members that have been ID'd to be living in Iran as a possible one. But there's also been talks of, you know, Zawahiri's son could be a possibility. You know, he's kind of handled the social media and the kind of the media apparatus of al-Qaeda. And then there's elements, like I said, in the Shabab and then Yemen and others that could fight. So, but it's a, you know, we don't have a super clear picture of their operating structure, you know, at any one point in time. You know, it's always kind of a constantly changing exercise. So this may take some time for the intelligence community and others to parse out what they're doing. And then at the same time, like I said, understanding, you know, under the Taliban rule of kind of a relaxed apparatus of allowing the al-Qaeda to operate there, what is it that they are planning and what is it that they are transmitting out to other elements to be working on?
And then the question is, how do you get that intel? And General Admiral Kirby, retired Admiral, Rear Admiral Kirby, now with the National Security Council, insisting, of course, we have no boots on the ground. And that says that basically no official designated military boots. That does not, in my mind, rule out that we don't have select units of SEALs, MORSOP, the Marines, or Army Rangers, or Taliban themselves serving as CIA liaisons or something of that nature. I don't want anyone exposed, but I would like your thought on how we're getting intel out of there.
Well, I honestly think it's very difficult. I mean, the fact is, you know, the rushed and terrible exit from Afghanistan, you know, just a little less than a year ago now, provided us little opportunity to do any kind of contingency planning, regardless of how you felt about, you know, continued U.S., you know, heavy military presence, or even the small, you know, footprint that we had as of, you know, July of last year. But those capabilities are gone. I mean, you know, think about, you know, this over the horizon capability, does not come without logistical challenges, due to the area in which it operates.
You've got to have somebody, you've got to have somebody on the ground giving you details. And I mean, right? I mean, if they were planning this for weeks and noted that his pattern was always to be on that balcony in the mornings, was that satellite video, someone on the ground reporting it? Your thoughts, again, I know restricted on what you can and cannot say.
Yeah, there, I mean, you know, I, the reporting has been, you know, it's been a variety of intelligence chains that have linked these together. And so via our signals intelligence, you know, ability of, you know, the National Geographic, you know, in terms of the National Geographic Agency and the, you know, National Reconnaissance Office. I mean, there's a lot of capabilities, in the intelligence community to try to kind of piece two and two together. And, you know, that was seen even, you know, to an extent, in the hunt for bin Laden. And so, you know, also, you know, back then, you know, they had identified a very tall individual who was spending a lot of time behind this, you know, large-scale wall. And so it seems like in this case, they were able to, you know, ID, you know, a pattern of behavior of people moving in and out of this house and those that weren't moving out of the house for a period of time, along with maybe some other links, you know, that they were able to piece together from broader intelligence collection. So it's a, you know, there's an art to it.
You're listening to Dustin Carmack. He previously served as Chief of Staff of the Director of National Intel, so he knows the sources and information. And, of course, with Osama bin Laden, one of the first things they did was get a DNA check. Apparently, Zawahiri was vaporized. I don't know if they got any DNA, but I guess by visual that they confirmed that he didn't come out of that alive, the man that was on the balcony. Whether or not it was him might be the next question.
Yeah, it's unclear, but it seems, you know, for the administration and then the time period that in which that went afterwards and two likely intelligence collection that occurred, you know, via signals intelligence or chatter even, you know, amongst Al-Qaeda networks globally, you know, that possibly were intercepted that could have confirmed the likelihood of his demise. And also the weirdness of the Taliban response. Essentially, the Haqqani network, who is in charge of essentially internal security in Afghanistan for the Taliban at this point, were providing, you know, quickly moved in to essentially cover up the crime.
Right.
So they were able to,
vacate,
you know,
the house.
Essentially see. Right, exactly. And they, you know, the understanding from the administration officials who have briefed this is that the Haqqani network then helped move, you know, his family, surviving family, out of the house, you know, which is empty now, to somewhere else. And so, clearly, you know, this connection between the Haqqanis and more broadly the Taliban with Al-Qaeda can be well documented now at this point.
Let me ask very quickly in our last 30-plus seconds here. We have an open border. We have had nationalities from the Middle East identified coming across illegally. Could this set off some kind of internal terrorist act in our inside the U.S. of these
cells? The southern border, I mean, it has been reported via, you know, the Customs and Border Protection of over, I believe, over 50 individuals in the last fiscal year, that's not even over yet, that are currently on the terrorism, you know,
no-fly list.
Terrorism risk.
Yeah.
Essentially the no-fly list have been intercepted and picked, you know, essentially picked up for trying to cross the borders. And so that's the ones that, you know, that, you know, have actually, you know, touched hands with a CBP agent. Those aren't the ones that, you know, could have gotten across. And so, yeah, I mean,
it's kind of
it's a blinking alarm.
Yeah. Dustin Carmack with Heritage Foundation. Thank you, sir. Nancy Pelosi's trip when we continue.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at LarryConnorsUSA.
The other day, some listeners saw me in Cafe Napoli, and one said, "We see you here all the time." I said, "Yes, you do. I am the Cafe Napoli ambassador." Truth is, I've been a Napoli customer for decades, when there was only the Clayton location, then Town and Country, now St. Charles. Trust me, you'll enjoy great food, drinks, service. Cafe Napoli, Clayton, Town and Country, Streets of St. Charles. And tell them the Cafe Napoli ambassador sent you.
Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Nancy Pelosi has departed Taiwan as of late today, yesterday actually, in Taiwan. A 19-hour visit that included visits with the Taiwanese legislature and the president. And, of course, continuing being verbally battered by China. And a lot of saber-rattling, including live fire drills and threats to shoot down Pelosi's plane. That did not happen. She's the first American politician of such high rank to visit Taiwan, since we do not recognize it as a country, a decision made by President Jimmy Carter to appease the Chinese Communist Party. But before her, the highest-ranking official was Newt Gingrich, who had gone to Taiwan. Pelosi, in a Washington Post column on her visit, made several statements throughout her trip, emphasized that she was not there to change the status quo of failing to recognize Taiwan's statehood, but maintaining friendly relations between Washington and Taipei. Well, either way, the Communist Party is not going to be happy because they consider Taiwan their territory. And that's why we continue to have operations, military operations, in that part of the South China Sea, and where China has been building islands out of the sea and then turning them into air bases. We had, while Pelosi was in Taiwan, four U.S. warships patrolling that area between China and Taiwan, just in case. We were told these are just routine drills. I think we're all smarter than that. But Pelosi did do an interview with a China News Asia reporter and said, I don't know why China is making such a big fuss. She speculated it could be to, quote, certain insecurities on the part of the president of China as to his own political situation. But it doesn't really matter, she said. What matters to me is that we salute the success of Taiwan. We work together for the security of Taiwan. And we just take great lessons from the democracy. Now, when she talks about the troubles they're having in China, they are massive. Not at the top level necessarily, but eventually it makes its way to the top. They have famine in many parts of it. They already have been under difficulty because of the sinking oil prices, even though they have bought from our reserve. I'll remind you that President Biden sold oil to China from our strategic reserve. They put it up for sale to anybody, and China outbid the others and got up most of it. But they've been floundering, according to a Caxin News Service. They've been having their economy absolutely floundering since the second half of 2022 began. Could be COVID-related. Could be just folks are getting tired of being constantly pushed down and beginning to find ways to slow up, just short of facing a firing squad. And, of course, keep in mind that some of their labor is slave labor, Uyghur Muslims. And for all of those in this country, and we should all decry slavery and be upset with it, but when I hear many of them denounce the slavery in this country and ignore the slavery that's happening in China, there's a disconnect. And you lose your credibility with me at that point. We had slavery in this country. It's a dark stain upon our nation. But at the same time, we fought a war between the states, or a civil war, depending on how you want to title it, not necessarily based strictly on slavery, but that states' rights should be considered, as according to the Constitution. Obviously, it was wrong, and I'm glad we're done with it. But I want to share quickly with you a story of, that a friend shared the other day. I think I mentioned it. Maybe I mentioned it the other day. It's one of these things that stuck with me. So if I'm repeating myself, bear with me, please. But it does deserve being repeated. He worked in a firehouse. He was one of the younger firefighters. They were in a very hot zone of an area where he worked. They often had call-outs. And all the firefighters were white. White men. I'll point out men, too, ladies, so you understand that that was that time back in the 70s or so. And there were often N-words thrown around like dropping pennies. And they were basically housed in the middle of a section that had a lot of minority residents. But when the fire alarm was hit and firemen rushed to the scene of the fire, be it an apartment complex or a single-family home, they didn't care what color the person was they were rescuing. They went in and risked their lives to save lives to bring them out. They may have been, quote, racist, or they may have just been mocking it, or they may just were careless and negligent and stupid. But when it came to their job and rescuing people, they did not care, and they carried out that mission. That's something we all should learn from, and we should look at it, our military, the same way. We don't need to be spending critical race theory teaching to our military. They know, I got your back, you got my six. But coming up, we'll go focus on in the next segment after news and commentary what they're still trying to do to your kids in school. Stand by.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.